he was accused of molesting and grooming young girls.
Well, on that note, which needs more exploration, we can't because we are at the end of the hour. Once again, Jacqueline Keeler, thank you so much for being on my show and for coming back to the Second Wednesday program.
Thanks for having me.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 8:59 a.m.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Development and Events Committee meets on the third Monday of the month at 5:30 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being
held.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.
DVD Hard Knock Radio hanging out with you this afternoon. I want to make sure folks are aware of what has been going on in Florida. In case you haven't heard, there's been a protest going on, an occupying of the governor's office by 14 members of the Dream Defenders. The Dream Defenders, based in Florida, are no strangers to our airwaves. They've been on many times. Speaking truth to power, doing direct action, and really raving the social justice banner. In this case, we're talking about them protesting the policies of Governor Ron DeSantis. And I don't know where things left, but we were hearing that there were people arrested, people occupying the office, and we want to find out what's going on and how people that are listening can be involved. Joining us is Hakim. And Kim, tell everybody your last name so I don't butcher it. I'm bad with names.
My name is Hakim Ola.
Hakim Ola, welcome to the show. So when we talked last night, we saw the press release. And then when we talked, you were saying that people were getting arrested. So can you kind of give our audience Dream Defender, Ron DeSantis, Occupation 101? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we started with a rally earlier in the day that led to a people's tour in the Capitol. So we're just giving some people, you know, a sense of everything that's been wrong, all the stuff that's been happening in the Capitol. I mean, I could go through all the bills from them making it a felony to drive an undocumented person in through this into the state of Florida, even if you're a family member of that person. Or the 6-week abortion ban, which is basically an abortion ban, to you know working to ban African American history, like real African American history. There's so many reasons we were there. So really, the rally, which led to the occupation, about 70 people entered the governor's office in the hallway, was a means of uniting different movements and organizations in the state and a lot of the issues, because it's a trap, right? Like, this is a class where we've seen it before. You divide different people, you attack the most marginalized people, you keep people, you know, not, it's not even distractions, because these are real, you're gonna have real impacts on people's lives, but you have people fighting 50 different fights every day is the idea. So we're trying to create one big fight to really paint a picture for the future. So that's what we, you know, a lot of the speeches talked about that beforehand. So we were in the governor's office for I believe about 7 hours, you know, singing, chanting some civil rights songs, a little Beyonce, a little Britney Spears, you know, doesn't hurt either. You know, we're demanding that DeSantis meets with us and really calling for people in the country to engage in similar actions like we were doing, like we've already seen in other states like Tennessee, and really trying to get people to start rising up against people like DeSantis, who, you know, they're not just trying to pass these bills. I mean, obviously DeSantis wants to be president, but they clearly have an agenda. You can call it fascism, you can call it a new confederacy, but whatever they're building is not for us, it's not for the people here. So that meeting, and you know, this isn't the first time we did this. You know, we lasted 31 days, almost, you know, 10 years ago, around 10 years ago, and we got a meeting with the governor at the time. So this, I feel like it shows how bad things have gotten. Instead of 31 days, we made it 7 hours before four different police departments came in to round people up. So we talked to people beforehand about some of the risk. We had lawyers present, and about 14 people decided to stay and accept all the consequences that they would receive there. Some of the people were not prepped for that and decided in the moment to join in, or aspired into that action. So I think we, I mean, the ideal was to really expose DeSantis, because the man, one, he can't debate because he's a goof. And he really, I mean, he just doesn't have a leg to stand on when it comes to like any of the things he's pushing. A lot of his party doesn't even really support him. We've seen a lot of his base defect in the polls. We've seen a lot of his donors defect. So we have just a very unpopular person, and he did a very, you know, unpopular thing by having us arrested that quickly.
Well, Kim, let me ask you this. A couple of things. One, Florida is also a state that passed these anti-protest bills, making it a felony if you do certain types of protests. So I know that if you block a freeway, it can be considered a felony in Florida. Mm-hmm. Is it a felony if you occupy the governor's office? I remember when the Dream Defenders occupied the office for those 10 days. We had a lot of people on when it was happening from your organization. And it caught a lot of attention. It was very spirited. There was a lot of people who rallied and supported you all.
Harry Belafonte was there.
Right. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it was one in which people were looking at serious jail time, if any, right? Mm-hmm. But this time with this guy, is it different, or what's going to happen with the 14 people arrested?
Right now, the law, they weren't even really interacting with the law. What they were interacting with was a rule, a house rule, which sounds a little plantation-y, but yeah. And basically the house rule, the Dream Defenders rule, was created explicitly after that occupation.
Oh wait, they did a law?
And it's a rule separate, so it's not technically a law. It's like a policy within the state house explicitly, which gives us some wiggle room and leeway there in terms of not catching felonies. So that rule, maybe they'll change it, because this wasn't done by DeSantis. This was done, you know, prior to that. So I imagine DeSantis might be revisiting that and maybe making that a felony too. So they use the Dream Defenders rule against the Dream Defenders here. And so that basically bans people from being overnight in the Capitol. Otherwise, I mean, there were other places we could have moved into the Capitol that weren't the governor's office that would have allowed us to stay in a different era. But after the last occupation, this rule was used against us. But the rule is leading to misdemeanors and not felonies for our people.
One of the purposes was to bring all these different organizations together. How has that been playing out? And I'm asking this because it's obvious that there are a number of wedges that are being put, and maybe you can break this down for us. So, for example, when we heard about the Stop Woke Act, right, the way it was being played out, you know, outside of Florida, at least where with us, it was that, hey, we're trying to protect the parents from these gay people that are going to indoctrinate your kids, right? So that's how it kind of played out. And sadly, there were people that jumped on it. It's like, I don't really like this group of people and blah, blah, blah. But when you tried to explain, like, yeah, but this thing is also going to smash on African-American, you know, studies, and it's going to do these other things, I don't think people quite got their head around it. And I saw more than a few people kind of pivot back and be like, yeah, but these gay folks are going to ruin our kids. Literally, you have people kind of saying that. Can you break this down for us? Because, you know, the way it gets reported, what gets highlighted, and then the examples that are used, like in the case with the Stop Woke Act, you had people who were supporting DeSantis that would go and find some really extreme, you know, examples, like the NAMBLA group, you know, where they feel it's okay to sleep with, you know, men can sleep with boys. And they would be like, this is what they're doing. And I'm like, well, I don't think that's I don't think that's supported by anybody in Florida, but that's the example that is being used. And I'm glad you're here to maybe clear some of that up.
Yeah, I believe a lot of people are waking up to the reality of what they're doing in terms of trying to divide us and use that division to attack all of us then individually as, like, you know, split particles, split people. And I think that's the point of social struggle, is that not everyone's always going to agree on everything, but through the process of struggling together, getting arrested together, being like chanting together, singing together, just talking to each other, that's how we build, you know, movements that can see past, you know, things that might appear to be, you know, differences. And that's why a lot of our framing isn't just the things that we're against, but utilizing the freedom papers that we created about 5 years ago to highlight a vision of the future. So we talk about things like freedom to be, like a freedom to like self-determinate, to like chart your own path, but also like within the context of your community, your people determining, you know what I mean? Like part of who your people are, you know, like safety, having like a good house, healthcare. There are just a lot of things that people do agree on, and really try to unite people around those things. And in the process, really getting to understand and see everyone, you know, as human beings fundamentally, who all just really want a good life. Exactly. So we started talking about that a lot. Like we're trying to build, you know, we're trying to get safe and trying to have a good life for everybody. And I think a lot of that framing has brought in different people. I mean, the people who were arrested yesterday, the 14 people, I mean, like, you know, younger folks, older folks, Black folks, white folks, Jewish folks who have also been, you know, used by DeSantis as a, you know, trying to divide them from other marginalized people, you know, gay folks, trans people, like just, you know, trying to build a coalition, alliance, and really just like a movement that is speaking to everybody and is able to bring people, like, you know, to align people around what we agree on, then to move forward on that. Because I also think a lot of people I think the reality is a lot of people also see through it after a while.
Okay.
People do waver a little bit once in a while. You know, I try to talk to my family about like some of the stuff, and it's just, everyone I think in this country, even Republicans, understand that we are in some sort of danger as a country. We are headed off some sort of cliff, whether it be climate catastrophe, whether it be just like the full falling of our, you know, what remains of this democracy that never truly was. And I think being able to paint a vision of something better is really winning a lot of people over. And I mean, that's the kind of, I've done work like that my entire life, and I've been able to recruit. I mean, my best friend, whose wedding I went to 2 years ago, was a Republican when I met him. And now, you know, he's as left as Bernie Sanders. So maybe a little further left than Bernie Sanders. I do love Bernard.
Right. Kim, let me ask you this. A couple of things. One, It's the end goal to vote somebody in, vote him out. Is that a possibility? Can you change the makeup of the legislature that has been willing to pass these draconian bills and laws in Florida? Or is there another strategy to turn things around? Is it maybe convincing a bunch of people to move in a different political direction? What's the end goal when you have this many people in a coalition?
Right now it's to build organization, to really do the work of organizing people in their workplaces, in their neighborhoods, in their schools, to build student organizations, to get people to unionize their place of work, to build community organizations that are robust, to build Dream Defenders chapters across the country. I'm living in Philadelphia currently and trying to build a Dream Defenders chapter there. We have people who are all over the country right now who are trying to build new chapters of Dream Defenders. Folks, I mean, a lot of alumni that came out of Florida that are, you know, are trying to like plant seeds and build a beautiful garden across the country that is able to like permanently do this work. Like, I think there's often a misunderstanding of power among the left right now, that we see the end goal of our work to be electing people. And I think that's, you know, it's folly. Like, it just doesn't work like that, because you can elect somebody and then they have all the power all of a sudden. Now you got to constantly organize to hold them accountable. But power is labor power. Power is the ability to get your neighborhood to turn out to the election like that. So we need to build organizations that can do that, that can also engage in disruption, that's calculated, well thought out,
right,
and targeted, and also shift power too.
Well, let me come back to this now.
Mm-hmm. I got to finish the power thing later, though. It's so important. It's the most.
Oh no, go ahead. No,
you'll
go,
hear in your life.
Finish your point on power. I didn't mean to interrupt that. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I could revisit it too. Yeah.
So, because what I'm looking at is a state that is surgically went in and tried to look at potential leverage of the power and mm-hmm. make laws against it. So let's mm-hmm. just say, I'm going to use Disney just as an example, right?
Yeah.
They say these guys are self-governing. They have their own infrastructure. They have a lot of power. Let's change the rules to strip them of that power. Now, mm-hmm. Disney's a billion-dollar company, and they're suing DeSantis and all that. Mm-hmm. And so we'll let billionaires fight that fight, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if it was Black folks, for example, in Florida who self-organized and said, we'll just do our own thing, right? These laws start to go from, we just don't want certain books in schools, to now we don't want these same books in libraries in general, to almost to a point where you feel like if you even have these books, it's against the law, right? So it's kind of like making laws so that if you're not in that decision-making process of making laws, you're finding yourself having to defend even one of the most ridiculous and probably unconstitutional mm-hmm. type of situations. But that's a lot of resources, that's a lot of organizing, that's a lot of battles that need to be done, whereas it might have been easier just to have you sitting in the seat of power and going to Kim, we know that we don't have to worry about you passing a bill that's going to ban books and ban me. You know what I'm saying? So that's what I'm just wondering, if, you know, because on the outside, it's like, how do we get rid of DeSantis? And I get it. You're saying, look, we got to have this a more permanent thing. I wouldn't say it's either or. I would say it's both and.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, no doubt. Yeah, I mean, I think there's the more immediate work. I think a lot of organizations in Florida have done, like the Florida Immigrant Coalition, Florida Rising, to fight against some of the worst parts of legislation. And some of it's been struck down, like some of the amendments, like the bill that was passed recently that makes it a felony to drive an undocumented person into Florida, even if they're your family member. The original bill made it was a felony just to drive an undocumented person, period, around the state of Florida, anywhere, to have them in your house. So we were definitely leaning into the worst of like the full-on fascist era that we're, you know, headed towards.
Would that have applied if I had a Cuban citizen in my house, or did they make an exception for that as undocumented?
That was, yeah, explicitly undocumented people, which is always, you know, based on US policy and what's convenient for our international politics and what countries we're currently exploiting versus what countries we're exploiting, but also want to make a mockery of their government by accepting them into the country.
Right.
Yeah, so I think we have to combat some of the worst of their policies, and that we are doing that, but at the same time, we also have to think long-term and build it. Because I mean, the Republican Party has taken L's at different parts of the last couple of decades, or appeared to take L's. But they were always building institutions in the background, building networks, you know, counting their money, raising their money. And we have to start doing a lot of the same work. Obviously we have to build people power on top of that. But yeah, I think we need to think about the long-term strategy. And I also think it is possible to defeat DeSantis in Florida. I'm not convinced that he's unbeatable here, either through election or through splintering parts of the Republican Party. I mean, the parts of the base, again, have already left him. Some of the Republican donors are already abandoning him. And I think things like yesterday were to speak to the American public, to speak to the people of Florida, to get them to take more action and get them to join organizations. But it was also to show how goofy this man is. Like, you couldn't even wait like a day. He was just like, nope, y'all gotta be out now. Because he's insecure, he's terrified, he eats pudding with his hands. Like, he's just not, you know, he knows he's the man behind the image is just is a shambly scarecrow at the most. Like,
right.
So we really want to expose that. And I think a lot of the Republicans will abandon him because a lot of the things, again, aren't even that popular amongst Republicans, like the permitless open carry that he was pushing for. Like, I think it was only 20% of Republicans even support that. So I think it's possible to actually to win some people over, to win some elections. And then when you do that, I mean, I think we do that also by, because like right now, I mean, the Democratic Party, as terrible as it is, the reason it's in any way good is because of the shifts that happened to that party between like the 30s and the 60s. And that was because people built power on the ground. People built labor unions, people built independent labor parties that were then later absorbed into the Democratic Party, but they brought their DNA with them into the party and helped transform it into something that was, you know, a compromise between labor and capital. And we saw a lot of the same thing with civil rights movements and organizations being built that had thorough membership across the country, like the NAACP and even more radical organizations like the Black Panther Party, that inevitably some of that work was swallowed up into the Democratic Party and some of that DNA was swallowed into the Democratic Party. So what we need to do is, yes, we need to, like, you know, fight and, you know, we have to play defense, absolutely. And, you know, try to take power, you know, in the electoral route where we can. But we also really need to build robust organizations. Because at the end of the day, like, labor has as much electoral power as any electoral organization in this country does. And arguably, it's one of the strongest bases. So if we start building stronger unions, start building labor, we'll get that. Student unions have played a major part in the electoral history and student governments in the United States. And, you know, still can, but the Republicans have specifically dismantled that across the country, the power of student governments engage in political work. And that's been a project that they've been engaged in since the 1980s. So we need to really rebuild these institutions that actually serve as the basis for electoral power, because electoral power is fickle at best.
Right.
You know, unless you get the good people, but the good people can't stay good people if they can't stay in office.
Right. Hakeem Olah, let me ask you as we get ready to wrap up, what do you want people to do right now? Where do things stand? you know, are there marching orders?
Yeah, I mean, right now, definitely a shameless plug, following the Dream Defenders on Twitter. I'm going to be running the Twitter page for the next couple of days. I run a mean Twitter game, so I'm excited about that. And then we're also really trying to use that to absorb people. We're trying to build Dream Defenders chapters. We have orientations for people who are interested in joining the Dream Defenders happening on the 11th and the 13th of this month. So definitely trying to get people to that. And the Twitter page is going to be a great place to get up-to-date information. You could also go on dreamdefenders.org to check out the Freedom Papers. And through social media, through emails, through phone calls, and some people are going to get their doors knocked on by us too.
Right.
So we'll be telling people, you know, what the next moves are around DeSantis, but also getting ready for the primaries, because we're very afraid that, you know, the primaries are going to be a fight against fascism, which is important, but it's really easy to be an anti-fascist. I know sometimes, you know, Biden might even struggle with that some days, depending on the day, but it's not that hard. So we're really trying to up the standards for the primaries. You can't just be anti-fascist. You must be pro something, pro a real democracy of the United States, pro the power of the people, pro worker power, student power, the power of women, the power of trans people, pro Black power. So we're gonna definitely be getting a lot of information and really expecting people to join. If people are down for this, we got to build organizations again. We got to really rebuild what has been lost in the last couple of decades.
Kim Ollott, thank you so much for joining us. There you have it, an update as to what's been going on in Florida. Keep your eyes out on it. Thank you to the Dream Defenders and the coalition of people that they're working with. More than 14 groups, I believe. And, you know, that's a mighty... you know, that's some momentum that we need to support. We're going to take a break on Hard Knock Radio. We'll be right back.
Hard Knock Radio. East, west, north, south, conectados. Every set, every hood, barrio to barrio. Y'all stand up, stay righteous, speaking to the thugs. One love, we know where y'all at. Brown Buffalo. It's a hard knock life, gotta pay your bills. They want a song about bling, but it ain't real. We speak to the kids and the OGs. Organize, mobilize, be the change you wanna see. 415s bumping Hard Knock Radio. Brown Buffalo, all up in your stereo. And to the youth, live life like it's golden. Go dumb, go hard, but don't forget where you're going. We from the hood, so it's all to the good. Let us know this, what you're feeling is right. Let's get this understood. It's only one reason why we here today. We trying to make real music so the people can relate.
Learning from these hard knocks, slipping in these hard knocks, listening to hard knocks, questioning the poor guy. Learning through these hard knocks, living for this hip hop, listening to hard knocks, ripping to the hard side. Learning from the hard knocks, living in these hard knocks, listening to hard knocks, questioning the poor guy. Learning through these hard knocks, living for this hip hop, listening to hard knocks, ripping to the hard side.
Davey D, Hard Knock Radio, hanging out with you this afternoon. We're continuing our series of Hip Hop is 50, and we want to bring back to the stage one of the three authors of the book, Freedom, Pedagogy. What's the name of it?
Freedom Moves, Hip Hop Knowledges, Pedagogies, and Future.
And that is the voice of Sammy Aleem. Last time we talked, it was actually at an event. We were at the big event that we were doing for the station up in Berkeley, and you guys were premiering the book. And within the pages of the book, you had a number of people from all around the country and all around the world that were exercising very effective ways in which to teach and how to raise the level of knowledge, cultural and otherwise, within hip hop. So here we are this afternoon in the city of Oakland. Just finished eating, but you brought some people from around the world. So who do we have here?
We have with us right here at this table La Llama Rap Colectivo, which is a rap collective out of Barcelona and specifically out of the neighborhood of El Raval. They represent that neighborhood. And for folks who don't know the neighborhood of El Raval, they'll explain it. People know Barcelona is like the tourist center, a tourist destination, all these famous things to go see. And El Raval is like the immigrant people of color, Muslim hood in Barcelona. And they do not just music, they make dope music, dope hip hop, but they also use hip hop to teach generations of young people how to better navigate their circumstances and fight for social justice and human rights.
How did you wind up meeting them?
I met them, we were just going talking about this almost 10 years ago, maybe 8-9 years ago. And we got linked up through someone who was doing hip hop in places like Iraq and Kazakhstan and in different places. Found out I was going to Spain, said, yo, you need to connect with La Llama Rap Colectivo. And we connected, and from day one, we became family because we're all in that same vibe of understanding the power, the transformative power of hip hop in communities. And we just connected like family.
Sammy, before we start talking to them, let's go back a little bit, because you've written with the late James Spady books that focus on the global aspect of hip hop. And y'all were doing that way before. Well, let me reframe that. People around the world knew that hip hop was global.
That's right.
But the birthplace of hip hop still kind of was fascinating. Like, they rap in France, like they're doing stuff in, you know, in Africa. So,
right.
So we were kind of late in understanding that people have been doing this for a while. So talk a little bit about the global aspect, how you've seen it, and how important is it for us on the 50th year to really be intentional about making those connections? Because it seems like the people in Spain know about the folks in France, and the folks in France know about the people in Nigeria, and Nigeria knows about the people in Brazil, and we hardly even know the artists in Mexico. We're just starting to know a couple of them in Canada.
That's right, and there's a whole host of artists in Mexico and Canada and elsewhere. Spady and I began doing the Global Cypher, Hip Hop Culture and Consciousness, in 1999, the same year that Street Conscious Rap came out. So Street Conscious Rap came out, and then we started taking a global lens in the late 90s. And then what you see is that we talk about a global hip-hop nation. And Chuck D talks about this. Like, when you talk about hip-hop, it's international, it's global. But then you have the USAers, folks in the United States, who are only focused on what's happening here. And it's not necessarily bi-directional. So you got all these hip-hop circuits going on globally where everyone's learning from everyone else. And then you have the U.S. over here that's kind of inward looking. And so a lot of artists are beginning to change that and starting to make those connections. Of course, there's always been hip hop on the ground in the so-called United States. I'm thinking of Bambaataa, the Zulu Nation, who's traveled outside of the U.S., right? France, Japan, and elsewhere, to kind of talk about the culture and the importance of the culture globally. And now in Barcelona, La Llama Rap Colectivo is one of those groups. We have Emil YX in Cape Town, who's been doing it for how many years, Emil, now? Decades?
Yeah, he's one of the pioneers, and we're going to do a separate one with him.
Yeah, so we're here with the whole crew and folks who really represent hip-hop on the global tip, but hip-hop from the heart, too. Hip-hop from the heart, no matter where they come from, right? It ain't where you're from, it's where you at.
So introduce the crew.
Yeah. So this crew we have right now is La Llama Rap Colectivo from Barcelona, representing El Raval. We have Michael here to my left, we have Sue next to Michael, and we have Draco next to Sue, and the three of them are here. We got MCs, producers, managers, organizers, activists, all doing kind of hip hop for human rights and social justice transformation, opportunities for the next generation. That's what they're focused on.
Appreciate that. Let me start off with you, Michael. Talk a little bit about the beginnings in terms of how you guys started to understand hip hop. Like, if I were to go to Barcelona, what's the story of origin there? You know, had it always been there? Did somebody come over there and do something and you all been inspired? And I'm asking that question because drum culture has been indicative of peoples all around the planet. Indigenous folks always had the drum at the center. So that might not have been a surprise when you heard breakbeats. I think almost every culture, at least when I've been around the world, has an oral tradition. So spoken word is always paramount. And then, you know, dancing may, you know, how people move has always been around. But particularly b-boying may have been something that got exported from the States otherwise. But how do you see it? And, you know, and tell us a little bit about your collective.
Vale. El hip hop en Barcelona, corrígeme, Draco, si también si me equivoco, llegó porque empezó viniendo desde Madrid, porque habían bases militares americanas y se fue introduciendo el hip hop y luego llegó poco a poco a Barcelona a través del graffiti, a través del break y eso. Entonces yo me involucré porque a mí siempre me gustó el rap, me gustó el activismo, me gustó la lucha social, me gustó reclamar cosas, y el hip hop es una herramienta que te permite hacer todas estas cosas.
So he was saying that hip hop, a lot of the origin is from U.S. military bases in Madrid that brought the culture and the music with them. And then also it started spreading in Barcelona, and there was a graffiti scenes, dance scenes that took off in Barcelona. And he got involved in hip hop early on because he was into all the rap, the dance, the graffiti, and all of that. And also into these kind of ideas of social justice and fighting for justice for people.
Draco, let me ask you, when he talks about fighting for justice, how did that unfold in Barcelona for you guys? What are the main issues that you find yourself using hip hop to fight, and how do you employ the culture?
I tried to say in English. In fact, we start the culture as ignorance. We don't know nothing about what is hip hop, but just can catch these feelings. And we are from a environment surrounded by immigrant people, people with struggles, poor people, but humble people, people from nothing, and sharing all we have. And
let me just ask you, so you guys are immigrants into Spain?
Yes, inside Spain. We are supposedly we are from Spain, but in Barcelona we are just Galician people, Gallegos, I say. It's like to be part of a city but not be part. And in hip-hop we say the same. It's like be part of a country, be part of a human being maybe, but not. Always trying to make you a part of society, and always you need to make two steps more than other people. We don't know why, we don't know, but we try to deal with this frustration, with this kind of rage inside of us. And we see in hip-hop, we see in the movies, like breakdance, like Star Wars, maybe when I see these videos, and this b-boy is doing his things, surrounded by a lot of people, different people from different cultures, with different languages. And we try to do the same in Spain, fight against the power. And
so it's the power, is it police brutality, is it the government, is it income inequality? What does that kind of look like?
First of all, I think political, because the politics, they want make us as different in the same, you know what I mean? It's like always fighting with this kind of idea of we are all the same, and we need to think the same, and we need to do the same. And if you don't do the same, you don't look the same, you are as a menace, I think, like an enemy to fight. And we live in the neighborhoods with the same people. We are brothers and sisters, not enemies. And we don't want to be involved in the kind of society we put apart my brothers and sisters. Doesn't matter if you don't have money or not have. Doesn't matter your color. Doesn't matter if you are male or female. And in hip-hop, we see that. Maybe don't understand a lot of words in the songs, but we can catch the vibes. Always start listen groups like Mos Def, Rakim, Wu-Tang Clan, like when Oli B is saying in the MTV, Wu-Tang is for the children, I cry when I listen that. It's like, hey, I'm a children too, it's for me. And yes, it is. And now we try to share with another young people, not the young, also the old people, say, we stay here, we are different, and we love be different, but in our difference, we are the same.
I want to ask you, you know, back in the days, I would play a number of artists from Spain, and what comes to mind is like, I want to say Malia Rodriguez, I think was her name. Yeah, right. So does your generation, is there like an old school, new school? Do you hook up with the old school? Because I was playing her like 10, 15, 20 years ago, right? I would play her, and it was like, she's from Spain. I think she was from Madrid, not Barcelona, but
generaciones de hip hop in España.
In fact, and now we are in a radio show. We started to listen El Rimadero. I want to make a shout out from my man J Mayúscula, and rest in peace, because when I was a child, I listened to the radio program one day by week. This man illuminate our darkness all the time. He's a black man, he's a humble man, a knowledge man, a wise guy, and never judge us, always trying to connect America with Spain, with the groups, with these philosophies, with these wise guys in New York and in every part of America. And in fact, this guy j- just for nothing, because they don't win a lot of money in Spain with hip hop. Now nowadays, yes, you have more industry, but you have our masters on that, as our old school members, and they do that just for fun, just for culture, and we try to reproduce the same. We try to be like they, and I just want to say thank you for the people doing his stuff, no matter what, no matter why, just doing and move culture for everybody.
Appreciate that. I'm going to bring in Sue in a second, but I want to ask either one of you before we do that. Spain is right next to Africa, right? There's a whole history with the Moors in Spain and the whole nine. What's the connection right now with hip-hop and, you know, either black folks or hip-hop in Africa? You know, what's the connection right now, considering that it's so close? Because when I was in Barcelona, you know, I had a hard time there, you know. I was triggered. I was like, you know, these guys are cool, but I didn't know, you know, is there a connection? Do people have an understanding? Especially when we see the type of musical exchange that goes on with Ibiza, you know, and all the house music stuff. What's the connection with hip hop in Africa?
Sí, sí que es verdad que hay como mucha gente, ¿no?, que viene de, tiene raíces de países de África, Guinea Ecuatorial, Marruecos, Senegal, que está haciendo rap en España, ¿vale? O nacieron allá en su país y llegaron a España, o directamente porque nacieron en España y hicieron rap ahí, como el Chojin también.
El Chojin,
claro.
El Chojin.
Entonces, yo creo que sí que hay bastante influencia. Lo que no controlo mucho es la cultura que hay dentro de África, porque no me toca de cerca.
So there are a lot of MCs of African descent and African heritage in Spain, whether it's Morocco or Equatorial Guinea or other places that are African origin doing hip hop in Spain. Michael has some Moroccan heritage himself as well, and it's just a part of the community, and part of the community also part of El Raval, where they live and where they represent and where they work. It's a heavily immigrant neighborhood. It's people of color, it's Africans, it's Latinx folks, it's all Muslims from South Asia, North Africa, other parts of Africa, and so that's all hip-hop in Spain. He didn't really have much to say on hip-hop, on African hip-hop, the connection there, because Africa's inside of Spain.
Okay, appreciate it. So let me ask you, in the book, Freedom Moves, they talk about, you know, pedagogy and, you know, things that you all do to use hip-hop as a tool for education and bringing about knowledge. Talk a little bit about the programs that you all do and, you know, how is hip-hop used.
Habla un poco sobre los programas que hacen su usando el hip-hop con los jóvenes. Dale unos ejemplos su de que hace. Ustedes, ¿qué hacen ustedes para usar el hip hop como un tool, o mejor dicho, una arma para justicia social con los jóvenes?
Vale, nosotros principalmente lo usamos como psicología. Bueno, es un arma, es un estilo que los chavales lo tienen muy accesible. No tienes por qué ser un super cantante y puedes hacer rap guiándolos bien, para eso está el Michael y el Draco, que los guían bien. Y lo que intentamos es que el poder de la voz, de la palabra, de la música, antes que la violencia o cualquier cosa, porque si no nos ponemos a la altura de los que son violentos.
So first and foremost, Sue started viewing hip hop as almost like a psychologist, as ways of healing all that the youth were facing. And Davey, you asked about the issues. There's police brutality there. I was surprised the first time when I went to Spain and the police had killed one of their neighbors in El Raval, and it was police murder. And I was like, I just left the United States where they're killing black folk left and right, and here we are in Spain and the same thing is happening. They're also going through gentrification and all the same issues, where developers are buying up land, displacing people, putting up five-star hotels, and they're fighting like hell against all of that. So Sue and La Llama, they're using hip-hop to raise awareness for kids to say, look, turn away from the violence, because they got these issues, right? Street violence, gangs issues, drugs issues, knife fight. They don't got the pistols and the guns, but they got knives and stuff like that. So they use hip-hop before violence, before any of that, as the word is more powerful. And that's one of the things they really try to teach the youth. So both that healing, that psychological healing, between all that you're going through, express yourself, get it out there, get it out of your body, and also as a way to fight against all of these oppressive forces, right? To use the tongue is mightier than the sword.
Let me ask you another question, Sue. When I've been to places like Beirut and even in parts of Africa, the U.S. is not the center for hip-hop, which I, you know, people find it very surprising. Mm-hmm. I think my first, like when being in Beirut and I was talking with somebody, and he's like, yeah, we can already go on a 14-city tour. And, you know, he was like going to Tunisia and all these places. And then he was talking about the beginnings of hip-hop. And he's like, man, I remember back in the days when the North and the South were going at it. And I'm thinking like, oh, you know, you're talking about, you mean like the West and East, right? No, the North and South. And then I realized he was talking about France. Like, you know, so what is the center for hip hop? What is the Mecca for you guys? And how much influence does the U.S. have in terms of hip hop? You know, especially now that we're in 50 years, we know on the continent and throughout Europe, it's been there for a good 40, you know, at least. So there's a whole other way of looking at things.
Pues está diciendo que hip hop es una cultura global. Y que en muchos países como Lebanon o donde sea, que ellos están haciendo hip hop en todo el mundo, mirando a Europa, uno al Medio Oriente, uno a Asia, a África, y no tienen como que mirar a los Estados Unidos como la cuna de todo. Están haciendo algo entre ellos. ¿Qué influencia tiene los Estados Unidos en el hip hop de España? ¿Es como el centro del mundo de todo lo que pasa, o hay redes sociales entre otros países y de hip hop?
Hombre, yo creo que Estados Unidos fue el inicio, es de donde, bueno, nos llegó. Yo lo primero que escuché fue de aquí, no fue de España. Yo creo que España le debe, bueno, el rap le debe mucho aquí, que es la cuna, es el centro. Si tengo que decir desde el Raval, nosotros trabajamos desde el hacia el Raval. Si se exporta afuera, guay, pero en el Raval ya hay muchas culturas. Hay mucho hip hop de diferentes culturas. Y es como trabajar hacia el mundo, hacia la cuna, para nosotros.
En España, en el Raval, hip-hop, they know hip-hop originated in the U.S. because that's where all the hip-hop sort of came from originally. That's what kind of got them going. A lot of youth talk about like Public Enemy being an inspiration, Wu-Tang being an inspiration, Tupac being an inspiration. And so they know that, and they know hip hop comes from that particular culture in the United States, from black people in the US. But they also have, like Michael was saying, all of the cultures of the world inside of their neighborhood. And so for them, they're producing hip hop for their hood, which is actually global hip hop. It's local and global at the same time. That's the global exchange that's happening very locally for them.
Draco, let me ask you this. You produce, right? I don't know if we have any of the music here, but, you know, is there a particular angle that you take towards the producing? Did you look at a particular producer? And to what Sammy and Sue were saying, you know, about the fact that it's global, I found that now people feel very comfortable with going with indigenous music. So if you come from Morocco, I often hear people like, man, I'm taking these Moroccan drums, these Moroccan rhythms, and I'm gonna put it in my music, and that's how we're gonna do it. You know, if I'm from Nigeria, we're taking Nigerian beats and we're putting it in there. So is there a particular flavor that you now favor? And, you know, what sort of equipment are you using when you're doing your production now?
It's a good question, because I understand the production or the music from hip hop to take to other places, not just to our places. And obviously we stay on the point in New York, maybe on this kind of producer like Pete Rock or DJ Premier, or maybe go to Detroit and say Jay Dilla or all that stuff. And when when I listen his works, they use a lot of music in the world. Music is music. It's not from a country. It's not from a ¿cómo se dice? Un pueblo determinado.
So you may hear some of those people, and you'd be like, oh man, they took some Moroccan music, so they're using music from around the world. So you do too.
Yes, obviously, and we think with our partners in Spain, like, we need to make some flamenco beats for be hip-hop, like, more than like us. It's like, okay, hip-hop is not like us, or like another one is like, hip-hop is hip-hop. And we try to do hip-hop, not Spanish hip-hop or French hip-hop. We try to do like the American guys, the Afro-American guys who understand. It's like, we are the students from your culture. We are here because you do things. It's like, when I produce for another rapper or for myself, I'm just gonna make this cipher going. It's like keeping going and try to put my essence, but my essence also is global. It's like Moroccan, it's like Nigeria, it's like Tunisia, it's like Turkey, it's like American also. I sample a lot Lina Simone, Aretha Franklin, all this reading, I love it, and I'm being love it with all the Motown. I play also with Brian Jackson, and I'm be
Brian Jackson from Gil Scott Heron.
Yes, I have the honor to play with him in Spain in La Sala Sidecar, because I have a project called Just Alive.
Wait, you played with him?
Yeah, and
he's all humble. Yeah, you know how we do, man. You know when me and Brian Jackson was up on the stage, you know how we do. You never perform with him, you know. I don't know. I don't understand. You know, man. When me and Gil used to kick it, you know.
I'm a lucky man, because it's like I never found nothing. It just appears in my life, and just try to make this trick for make bigger. And when I play with Brian, he say, don't be nervous. You are so young. I'm too old, but you do your work well. So just do your work. That this kind of guy say to me, don't worry about it. Just do your work. It's like, okay, Papa, okay, Father, thank you so much, because I try to don't put nervous, but I feel cojonado, say in Spain. I don't know what to say in English.
Well, there you have it. What's the name of the group again? Because you know my Spanish is bad.
La Llama Rap Colectivo.
My Llama Rap Collective Mosivo.
Mosivo.
Mosivo. There we go.
What is Mosivo, David?
Movement. I know that, man. I know a little something, you know. I'm around the town, man. I get out.
You need a few lessons, bro. You know, there's too many Spanish.
I get out in these Spanish streets,
too
you know.
Many Spanish
I know that. We're gonna take a break. I want to thank Sue, Michael, and Draco. We're gonna take a break on Hard Knock Radio. We'll be right back.
Two hip-hops exist on this planet. My hip-hop with all the elements of the hip-hop culture, which is revolutionary, and their hip-hop, owned by the rap industry.
And writer was not even said to make hip hop as minds much tighter. Freedom fighter or revolutionary. My hip hop's not in popular media or TV. Industry's brain to my hip hop means nothing. Shiny offerings can always buy them everything the same.
You're a corporate tool in a corporate controller. Your deals are plastic. You should get your ass kicked.
See me working in communities for free. Money be changing what we named it originally. Wrongly named rap, right names I'm seeing. Writing not graffiti, b-boying not dancing. My hip-hop's actually in the accent that I speak. No wannabe American, fake accent speaking freak. Can't sneak past the fact that my hip-hop's revolutionary. She's about community, can't buy her integrity.
My hip-hop is not your hip-hop, because your hip-hop just wants to make it pop. So stop. Our hip-hop is not their hip-hop, because their hip-hop is just a corporate cha-cha. My hip-hop is not your hip-hop, because your hip-hop just wants to make it pop. So stop. Our hip-hop is not their hip-hop, because...
Hard Knock, turn the speed. talk, don't stop. EMN at it again, Sandman, Daddy Man, Prince Juwan King, innovation, stimulating ill conversation. Anything else, just imitation, simulation. Step into the zone, the Bay Area zone. Hard Knock Radio, let's go. Big shout out, Anita and Davey D. Yeah, right, feel me. Yeah. Honing down at Hard Knock Radio.
Hard Knock Radio.
Kinda crazy though. Oakland, stand up.
Yeah. Stand up.
Ensemble, Big Night Wolves.
Yeah.
Bellevue.
Come on, check out.
Why every obvious pick they hard knock when they ain't going all in and ain't paid the cost for the fee? Ain't nothing made, they beats trying to eat, get it any from the steel trade, beats, they leave. Maybe they'll save you a seat at the table with a great bread making his peace. Say the beast and the lovers I name with a please. Make some shade on the name and speed. Let's go. It ain't David G.
Real Talk Radio.
You and I rocking with the best in the West.
West Coast. Monday through Friday.
Sing it, Chris.
East Coast. Dance out.
Hey, yo, this is Clipping. You're listening to KBOO.
Welcome to World Ocean Radio. I'm Peter Neal, director of the World Ocean Observatory. Modern agriculture, farming the land, has been a paradoxical contributor to human sustenance and health. The transformation of small farming to large industrial enterprise enabled us to feed our rapidly growing national population and to create food grain as a major export and source of corporate revenue. But as always, there are now revealed the unforeseen health and social consequences of the consumption paradigm as applied to food and farming. The two most serious outcomes have been, first, the emissions generated by fossil fuel-driven fertilizer production and runoff that has poisoned our air and watersheds, and second, the destructive of the small farm model as a source of community and social coherence. Government subsidies added to this impetus, and the full consequence of the process has only recently become too clear and concerning. The pressure to feed ourselves and others is no less demanding, and now we're turning to the ocean to make up the difference, in danger of applying the same financial principles and unsustainable behaviors to harvest from the sea. The problem of unrestricted, unregulated fishing is already well known. The ocean, nonetheless, remains an essential ongoing source of protein, but only if we change the values, structures, and behaviors applied to farming the marine environment. There are signs of progress. In Iceland, there are laws requiring the use of 100% of the fish, requiring that no part of fish caught can be tossed overboard as bycatch, that a utility for every part be developed. An amazing wave of invention and enterprise has followed, with new small businesses offering new fish-based cosmetics, bandages for cuts and burns, fishbone probiotics, even ice cream and clothing, made from what before was considered nothing but waste. Lobster fishing is an example of a sustainable fishery limited by numbers of fishers and pots, by season, by size and gender, and now even more so by conflict with other marine interests, the preservation of right whales among them. Offshore fish farms are another innovation, fraught with problems of fish food and fertilizer waste, opposition by the lobster industry and shoreline residents. Norway, however, has somehow addressed all these objections, upgrading the process, waste control, disease, and coastal location to create a profitable industry. Most salmon available in the United States is a product of fish farming there or in other European or Asian waters. Shrimp, tilapia, mussels, oysters, even eel, sea urchins, and abalone are becoming more and more available as the outcome of ocean and coastal aquaculture. The future of these processes may be moving back to the land, coastal closed fish factories that obviate some of the objections to in-water farms, but even those have found opposition from coastal towns and conflicting interests. The entire ocean fishing industry worldwide is still subject to the growing hazards of global warming and sea temperature rise, increasing acidification, oxygen depletion, extreme weather, inflated fuel and transportation costs, all testing the limits of exhaustion, each a possible source of sudden change and ecosystem collapse. Seaweed is next, and today it's becoming another, perhaps less vulnerable area for marine food development. In Japan and Southeast Asia, and along shore in the U.S., there is growing enterprise and market demand for seaweed as a high-nutrition food source with proven impact on human health. Long life expectancy in Japan is attributed to high consumption of seaweed over time. As seaweeds are rich in bioactive compounds not present in terrestrial food sources, they represent a new approach toward understanding and treating disease. Concurrently, seaweed-based food products are becoming more and more prevalent in health food stores and large supermarkets in the form of kelp burgers and artificial crab cakes, seaweed pasta, breakfast sausage, nori sheets for soups, and all sorts of probiotics, evidence of a fast-growing movement toward plant-based foods produced by natural regenerative farming, expanding distribution, and greater public acceptance. Seaweed is ubiquitous in the marine environment as a harvestable plant and algae. It can be grown sustainably. It can be new work for our young entrepreneurs, better food for our children, renewed viability for our coastal communities, and a major contributor toward our personal and public health. All demonstration of rescue, R for renewal, E for environment, S for society, U for understanding, and E for engagement. We will discuss these issues and more in future editions of World Ocean Radio.
Hi, I'm Jill Fritz with the Humane Society of the United States, and you're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Radio is hiring. We are currently accepting applications for the position of Membership Coordinator. The Membership Coordinator is responsible for planning and developing KBOO's fundraisers and on-air membership drives, data entry, working with major donors, direct mail campaigns, and community outreach. This position is 25 hours per week. For the full job description and instructions for applying, go to our website at kboo.fm/membership-hire or send your resume and cover letter to hiring@kboo.org. Applications are due by midnight, Friday, May 19th. KBOO is an equal opportunity and affirmative action employer.